I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Rail it back to Dumba. Fires. Save Robin. Escapes Granlund, then tried to center. Loose puck, Mannix scores! Mikko Koivu to Stewart. Back to Koivu, he scores! To the point for Brody, taken away by Parisi. Zach Parisi in alone for Minnesota. Parisi scores! And the crowd roars as the Wild knock the Flames 6 points back in the playoff race. 4-2.
6 points back in the playoff race, and that is great news for the Minnesota Wild and the Minnesota Wild faithful as they come up with another big win. Staring them down the barrel tonight is the Los Angeles Kings, the hard-charging, fast-charging Kings. But first things first, we're going to take a look at the Wild game against the Flames, the solid road trip they had, and picked up a couple of more points. Two in Long Island, two in Toronto. On the phone, embedded in Manchester, New Hampshire. We also have another guy embedded, too. But first, it's Chad Graff. We've got full coverage of the NCAA tournaments. Chad Graff, of course, following the University of Minnesota, University of Minnesota Duluth. We have Tim Kolomainen in Fargo. He's watching the goings-ons, the big overtime victory for the St. Cloud State Huskies. We'll be talking about all of that. But first, we bring in Chad Graff, who is on location. Chad, kind of a last-second assignment for you there.
Yeah, on location and embedded here at my parents' house. It's almost like high school again. I'm not at the desk of a Marriott, and they don't give out award points here, but here I am at my parents' house in Manchester, New Hampshire, and I was getting ready for that last road trip for the Wild. It was just a quick trip to Toronto and Long Island, so I'm packing on Sunday, and I obviously follow the rest of the Minnesota team, so I want to see where everybody landed in the NCAA tournament. So the bracket comes out Sunday. And I'm doing the scan, you know, okay, there's where Minnesota State is, there's where St. Cloud is. Oh, look, Duluth is in Manchester, and I see the Gophers are in Manchester playing UND. And all of a sudden, I quickly called my editors and said, now, this is where I grew up, I can go back there, I can save you money on a hotel. And so, long story short, here I am in Manchester, New Hampshire, covered a tough Gophers game last night, and we'll see what the Bulldogs are able to do against a very good BU team later this afternoon.
Well, when you hear it save money on a hotel room, it was book it, you're in. So
music to the ears of the editors.
Absolutely. We know how all that goes. So, well, we'll get to that in our next segments. Obviously, you and you will be covering the that regional that included the Gophers and UMD. That'll be in our second segment. In our third, Tim Kolomainen is going to join us from Fargo, as he will have the breakdown on that one. And then, of course, our final segment, as is a custom and tradition. You and I will also be looking at the week ahead for the Wild. And David Helmer, our producer, may be working a couple of talking points for us, too.
Oh, boy. What a treat.
We've got the Fischler report in front of us. Do you get that regularly right now?
I do. It's outstanding.
How great. How many writing ideas have you gotten off of that?
It's almost overwhelming. I have to block out like 20 or 30 minutes whenever it comes out and sit down and scan through it and read it and highlight stuff. Terrific.
Yeah, I found I used to use it as nightstand, go to bed reading material, you know?
Right,
no, you
got
to be 100% focused because you're missing things. It's too good.
Yeah, so, if you have a wobbly chair, you can fix that and just slide it right under.
Absolutely. So let's get into the Minnesota Wild. Big win over the Flames, and they created some separation for them between the Flames, who entered the game. You know, they've been pretty much, the Calgary's been in the playoff mix from the very beginning, and this has been a team that, they've been vacillating from second to third in the Pacific Division. Los Angeles is coming on pretty hard. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10, and Calgary now 4-3-3 in their last 10. That's a tough pill for them to swallow. Now, Calgary can still do some things about jumping into the Pacific end of things in the second and third place deal, but for the Wild, it really pushed them down, and it's going to make it next to impossible for them to be caught by Calgary, and all the other teams in the West are all but eliminated at this stage.
Right, and the Wild certainly didn't clinch the playoffs last night if we're looking at the technicalities, and if they lost every game, you know, the rest of the way, if they lost all seven games, they probably wouldn't make the playoffs. But last night's game was so big for the Wild, because all it takes now is a win and maybe an overtime loss, and they're in the playoffs. There are a couple different ways to look at it. One, how close the Wild are to the playoffs now. It's very hard to imagine Calgary keeping pace with them. And keep in mind, Calgary is a very good team. They lost Giordano, who's one of the best defensemen, about a month ago, and they played very well without him. I mean, that would be like the Wild losing Ryan Suter, except, in my opinion, the Wild's defense is a little bit better. So it'd be like Ryan Suter and a little bit more. So they played well, but it's so tough when you're missing key guys and they're stumbling a little bit. So, the Wild are virtually in the playoffs right now. They have as many regulation overtime wins as any team in the Western Conference, with the exception of Nashville. So what they've done since January 15th, we talk about it on a weekly basis. We write about it all the time. But it's still so remarkable when you take a step back and look at the fact that the Wild are now 1 point behind Chicago. The Chicago Blackhawks in third in the Central Division. Wild are right there after being in 12th in the Western Conference on January 14th.
I will say this. This show is, I would term it cutting edge, a little bit different from most. Where did you hear that first, that Chicago was attainable? I think it was right here on this program when it was floated about 3 weeks ago.
And look at how realistic it is. I mean, Chicago's been down the stretch, of course, playing without Patrick Kane, and their schedule, though, is not that difficult, and it's not like Chicago's breezing through it. They've lost two games in a row. They weren't even, you know, in the same building with Columbus last night, and that's a Columbus team that is not a playoff team. Granted, they've won five in a row, but now suddenly, what the Wild could do by catching Chicago, and Chicago, keep this in mind, still has a very strong advantage. They have a game in hand. They still have a point ahead over the Wild, although the Wild do have the tiebreaker if they finish with the same number of points. But what that would do for the Wild, if they're able to catch them, is A, it shows regular season improvement that they're no longer just a wild card team, but B, when you're looking at the three teams that the Wild could play, if the Wild are able to catch Chicago, it rules Anaheim off of that, and I think both of us think that Anaheim is probably the worst matchup for the Wild.
Yeah, I mean, a worst case scenario of any teams you want to avoid. Obviously, when you're a playoff team, you say, bring it on, we don't care, that type of thing. Let's be real. But I think Anaheim, you can beat from a game-to-game situation. And Minnesota's proven at home, they just can't take the, quote, road game that Anaheim brings to the table at the XL Energy Center with that losing streak. What is it, five straight now that Anaheim's won in the X, or is it even more?
It might be even more. They've been very good, and it's just such a big physical team, and you know, the Blues are certainly a big physical team, so I've gotten some questions, and I'll ask you too, but I get a lot of questions about why are Anaheim and St. Louis different? They're built pretty similar, you know, from top to bottom. They're very similar teams, but Anaheim scares me a little bit more for a big reason, is that, you know, they have the track record. They've shown that they can make some noise in the playoffs. St. Louis, I think, you know, just doesn't have that confidence. I think that if you start getting pucks deep on them time and time again, it just becomes very tough to continually go and retrieve and get up ice, even with the big lineup that the Blues have.
Well, and here's what I say, too. That's a really, really good point that you bring up. The Anaheim Ducks and the St. Louis Blues are the anti-Chicago, anti-Pittsburgh, anti-Boston type lineups, in my opinion. You know, a lot of teams started, you know, this has been going on forever. You try to build for what are the upper echelon teams. And I can remember back when the North Stars lost 4-1 to the New York Islanders back in the 81 Stanley Cup final, there was a lot of movement and a lot of, well, we got to be more like the Islanders type thing. Well, while you're crafting your team to be like the New York Islanders, guess what? There is an even different edition coming out called the Edmonton Oilers that nobody could catch up with. So while you're focusing on one brand of play or one conference style of play, you have to kind of keep evolving. So I think one of the things that looked to me, it's quite obvious with the speed and the things the Wild were doing, they're building to be a Chicago, Pittsburgh-like hockey club. In the process, teams like St. Louis, Anaheim, Los Angeles were kind of starting to push through as the bigger, stronger teams, maintaining some speed, but very hard to play. Why Anaheim is bothersome for me as a viewer from a first-round exodus, if that happens, or the one team I wouldn't want to be playing if I'm the Minnesota Wild, they have goaltending, and they're just flat-out jerks. They're mean, and they're hard to play against, and I think that is a factor over the course of a seven-game series. Yes, you can win from game to game, but can you outlast a seven-game series? The St. Louis Blues playoff track record to me has been absolutely, I mean, it has not been that great. And I do think Elliott and Jake Allen have issues in goal there. And with the Nashville Predators, you know, I mean, they've been hit and miss here toward the end. And they've proven the Wild are a good matchup as well. So that is my take from what the options are. Really, there's three for the Wild. It's Nashville, St. Louis, or Anaheim. That's it.
Exactly right. And I mean, look at the way you brought up how they're playing. And just look at the way that they played last night. Matt Dumba with a power play goal after drawing one. Thomas Vanek gets his 20th goal of the season. Zach Parise on a breakaway gets his 30th. Mikko Koivu with a very pretty goal. That's how the Wild do it, and that's how they did it last night in a big win.
Well, let's take a listen here. There's a turning point to lead to all of that, too, after it was 1-1 from the Dumba goal you mentioned. It was a big hit from Joe Colburn that was on Justin Fontaine. He's shaken up. Man, if that wasn't interference, I don't know what was. I just screamed interference. I couldn't believe that didn't happen. But that was a turning point. And then one of the things that Mike Yeo talked about is what a gutty player that he was.
Well, I think that we were pretty awake to start the third period, but that was definitely a rallying point, and especially for Fonzie, great response by him. You know, that's the way you respond. You know, I got asked the question this morning, you know, are we the most physical team? Not in the sense of running guys through the boards or dropping the gloves, but you know, that's a tough hockey player to come back from a hit like that the next shift and respond that way. That's the kind of toughness that we're asking for, and so that was a great response. And
to his point, Brent Flair was talking a lot about that last week, about, you know, he brought up Kyle Granlund as being a tough player. And I know you and I were sitting in the studio here, Chad Graff, and we looked at each other and we're like, really? But yeah, to that point, that's what they're referring to.
Right. It's that sort of toughness. And that's the way that the Wild have always said that they want to respond from big things. I mean, even going back all the way to the Keith Ballard hit from Matt Martin in December, January, you know, that was a rallying cry for them. And that certainly was a hit with a lot more on the line, and we've seen what it's done and what head injuries have done to Keith Ballard. But that's how the Wild need to respond. That's how they need to play. And it was very impressive how they played the third period. Look, the Wild were the better team the first two periods. They outshot the Flames 13-6 in the first period. They outshot them 15-9 in the second period. But all of a sudden, you know, you have a little bit of a rallying cry. Justin Fontaine comes out, sets Thomas Vanek up with his 20th goal, and Mikko Koivu flies up the ice, and all of a sudden you've got a three-goal lead, 4-1.
And we've heard a lot about Zach Parise's goal. That was the fourth goal of the game for the Wild. That's the 30th of the season for him. Sixth time in his career he's tallied 30 goals or more in a season. And only the fourth Wild player to score 30 goals in a season or more. Marian Gaborik did it 5 times. Brian Rolston did it 3 times. And Jason Pominville did it, of course, last year. So that's a big deal there. Other big notes to make of in this one. Thomas Vanek now recorded his 20th goal of the season. That gives him 10 seasons of 20 goals so far, and he's been really on fire here. 7 goals, 4 assists, 11 points in his last 10 games, and he has been fantastic. Chris Stewart can't say enough about what he has brought to the plate, and it was Bob Hartley who said that the Minnesota Wild were the better team. They dominated, they got things done, and without question, that was a Wild victory from head to toe. Chad, we're getting ready for a break. Your final thoughts.
Well, I just think that, you know, the Chris Stewart addition, we looked at, and I was one of those people that was definitely a little bit skeptical of, but for the price that they paid, a 2017 second round pick to get Chris Stewart in here, it adds a whole bunch of depth. I think that's been a great move, and I think the Thomas Vanek's emergence of late has been just outstanding. Earlier in the season, it did not look like this was a guy that was going to score 20 goals. Now he's got 20 goals, 30 assists. Very impressive from Thomas Vanek of late.
Patience is a virtue, by the way. We love having new listeners. We get new listeners each and every week. Hello to John and Julie Podgorak, who are listening on the man known as Pud from the Matamidi area. Thanks for listening, guys, and keep on sending the notes, and we're enjoying the show. Looks like we've got a few more weeks, maybe months, to continue the On the Ice radio show. Coming up next, it's NCAA hockey. More from the Pioneer Press is Chad Graff right after this.
My whole mom right now, but they, those seniors helped us out a lot. In the 2 years I've been here, I've learned so much from them, and from when I wasn't here, they definitely made their mark here, and we can't thank them enough, and they've been so successful over the years, and I know going out of this, they're going to be successful in life, whether it's hockey or the work life. These guys are workhorses, and they got a good career ahead of them.
That was Minnesota Golden Gopher Vinny Lettieri talking about the seniors on their team that played the last game in the University of Minnesota Golden Gopher uniform. It was a group of players that were passionate and very successful throughout their seasons. Frozen Four, national championship game last year, and NCAA appearances. And I think Don Lucia had said, Chad Graff, that this team had the most wins of any senior class in the country.
Right, so it's always tough when a collegiate career comes to an end, and this senior class did a lot for this program. They went to the tournament all 4 years they were here, 2 Frozen Fours, the national championship, like you mentioned, in the national championship game. But this season, you know, after the outstanding run of last season, this season for the Gophers, it just never really came together, even during their winning streak in the last month or so when Adam Wilcox turned it around a little bit and the team seemed to, you know, they won something like 11 of 14 games to enter the tournament. They won the Big Ten title. So they won the Big Ten conference title in the regular season and the postseason. So they did some good things this season, but it just never really felt like it had the feel of last year. It never really seemed like they were bound to make a run. And last night, between, you know, Minnesota Duluth and the Gophers, it really wasn't close. The Bulldogs were far and away the better team. It was 3-0 before the Gophers could even get to intermission after the first period and regroup. And the Gophers were the better team for the first 5, 6, 7 minutes. The Bulldogs hadn't played in 2 weeks. They were still getting their legs back, and all of a sudden, after a TV timeout, and, you know, UMD started to realize, all right, we have our legs back, let's get going. There was no question who was the better team. After it was 3-0, after the first period, I went over to Bruce Siski from UMD Radio and said, you know, this isn't over. The Gophers are going to make a push. Anytime it's 3-0, you always see the other team push a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 3-1 or 3-2 going into the third period. And I was flat out wrong. The Bulldogs came out, and UMD was still the better team in the second period. So a tough way for any collegiate career to end. That senior group definitely did a lot, but this was just not the Gophers' year.
Well, I would have said not this team. No, I'm just kidding. But, yeah, you're right. It's 4 straight wins for the Bulldogs, the 5th meeting between those two teams. So they go 4-1 against the Golden Gophers. And Scott Sandlin, after the game, knew he was going to have a game. He had a lot of respect for the Gopher program and, of course, is looking forward to their game tomorrow, or today, rather, against Boston University.
No, again, obviously a great win for our team. Very important for the team. I thought we started a little slow. Tens made a couple saves first part of the game, and we kind of found our legs, and from that point on, we played a pretty good game. I mean, it's really important against any team, but certainly our success against Minnesota, the 4 wins, we scored the first goal, and I think we built off that tonight. I liked our game a lot tonight, and obviously we got to find a way to do that tomorrow.
Were you mailing me a letter there, Chad Graff?
What's that?
When you flipped your notebook page, it sounded like you were mailing a letter or something.
So the Gophers go first half of that game, and I've got a tight deadline after that. So I moved from the very front row of the press conference room to the very back. And at that point, as he's talking, I'm flipping through notes and trying to, you know, look at the last minute stuff before filing my story as he's talking and just adding quotes as he goes.
Well, one thing that the pairwise says is it doesn't lie. You know, I mean, the Gophers did really win a lot of games down the stretch, but they won against a lot of Big Ten teams, a lot of those games that weren't anywhere near the postseason here in the NCAAs. And, you know, here they sit right now. I mean, so there's a lot of discussion. You know, we're going to bring Don Lucia's quotes in here when we're done, but, you know, at some point, Tubby Smith was fired for less, for crying out loud. I mean, so let's be honest. Is this team underachieving? It has to be with the amount of talent they have. You can't question that.
Right. Well, either last year's team vastly overachieved or this year's team vastly underachieved. And I'm inclined to think that last year's team was more to, you know, where they were. This is a team that, you know, always has top-end talent, always has guys that are well recruited, and it just never got put together this year. And I think that it sparks, the discussion that has been ongoing ever since the Big Ten announced that they were having a hockey. It's unfortunate for the Gophers because I don't think that the Big Ten, at least in the foreseeable future, is ever going to match the old WCHA. And now they just have to find ways to be able to win without facing that competition each week. And I mean, it's difficult. But if you're looking at it from an optimist view, Wisconsin can't possibly be that bad over the long stretch.
Oof-ta.
Penn State is on the rise. But at the same time, it's just so hard to really build on your game and know how good you are. And I think that's what it was like for the Gophers when you're playing Wisconsin and Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan State and all these teams. It's just so difficult when you don't have the schedule of the old WCHA.
You know, there's 12 teams left in the NCAA men's ice hockey playoffs, as they call it on NCAA.com. And of those 12 teams, three are from Minnesota. None of them are from the crown jewel, the pride on ice, the Minnesota Golden Gophers. To me, that's a big problem. And that's an absolute wart right there. I mean, actually, you could say 3.5 Minnesota teams are out there if you want to include UNO, because they have so many Minnesota-born players on that roster that are making huge impacts. And then another, portion of players on North Dakota that's still alive as well. But the fact is that you can't, in my opinion, you cannot have 14 National Hockey League draft choices. Either the NHL is that bad at selecting talent, or you've got all this talent and nothing happens. Now, the Russians lost, and I'm not saying this because of this year. You've got Holy Cross from the years past. You've got all kinds of things, all sorts of, they have a ton of success. And I guess, when you are at the University of Minnesota, you sort of are the Montreal Canadiens and New York Yankees of hockey and baseball. And yes, it is expected to go deep into these things.
Right. Well, when you lose it, you can't just sit back on that, because when we look around, and I'm glad you brought that up, all these other teams, there's no question that Minnesota is producing Division I talent. Look at the way Duluth has done it. Look at the way Minnesota State has done it. Look at St. Cloud. You mentioned UNO. There's so much talent in this state. And like it or not, whenever the Gophers have an early exit like this year, it's going to come down to that, whether the talent is being produced, whether it's being selected properly, because let's face it, the Gophers, 9 times out of 10, have their say of who they want. But this team just didn't get it done. They didn't, early in the season when they were playing non-conference games, they didn't look like a team that could compete. Last night's game against Minnesota Duluth was the fifth meeting between these two teams, and the Bulldogs won 4 of them, which I think says a lot about, that in-state so-and-so rivalry.
Well, and the Bulldogs are starting to remind me of the team with Justin Fontaine on it and Jack Conley and Mike Conley, and they had Kenny Ryder as their goaltender. They remind me of that team where they're just very solid and sound. They didn't finish the year the way they probably wanted to, but fact remains, Boston University is going to have a game in front of them, who had to go to overtime to beat Yale, a pretty good Yale team. Also, by the way, remember Lake of the Woods, Lyon, the goaltender, was on Yale that led them all the way through. He was always a Brimsek guy and one of the top goalies in the state. Good to see that he's not only getting a great education, but playing some sound goal as well. Let's listen to Don Lucia at the end of the game against the Bulldogs yesterday.
Well, it's obviously disappointing anytime your season ends. It's hard to walk in the locker room and you know, say goodbye to, especially the seniors. They had a great four-year run. I think heading into this weekend, they'd won more games than any other group of seniors in the country with the regular season, a couple Frozen Fours and four NCAA tournaments. Obviously disappointing to lose a game tonight. I thought we came out the first 10 minutes. We had good energy, but then it wasn't going to be our night. UMD's a very good team. We knew that. They beat us four straight times. They deserve to move on and advance. You know, we misfired a little bit tonight. We deflected two pucks in our own net. You know, this time of the year when those things happen, it's not easy to chase the scoreboard all night long. So I give credit UMD for their play. They're a good team. We knew that going in. And, you know, we talked about the matchups. They were able to dictate matchups all night long. And you know, they were able to play with the lead. And this time of the year, it's a lot easier to play with the lead.
Do you think he knew that his team was outmanned? It certainly sounded like it.
I think it was pretty apparent after even the first period that the Bulldogs just had the better team going. And to credit UMD, they were an outstanding team. I was very, very impressed with them. Their defense was jumping in on the play. They were very good. The forecheck, my goodness, the forecheck was relentless. The Gophers couldn't get out of their own zone. And I think that speaks to some of the issues that the Gophers had. But holy smokes, I was very, very impressed by UMD, and I watched most of that Boston University-Yale game, and I know that Boston University is good. Everybody knows that BU is good, but yesterday they weren't nearly as sharp as you might have expected for their first-round test. I don't know if they were looking past Yale or just were a little bit off. I would not be surprised at all. BU is the top seed in this region and has been a top-five team for most of the year, but I would not be surprised at all if today when they play, UMD's forwards just are relentless on the forecheck again and Minnesota Duluth heads to the Frozen Four.
Well, and of course, you have on Boston University, you have the big name player too as well, which is going to be a problem, for everybody, with Jack Eichel.
He was amazing to watch. He only had one point, and it was on the game winner, but anytime he's on the ice, it's almost like when you watch Alexander Ovechkin live or when you watch Sidney Crosby live. It's just something about when they come over the boards, before you even realize who it is, your eyes just lock into that player, and in this case, Jack Eichel, as he's skating around. He's big, he's strong, he's not flashy like the Connor McDavid, who will probably be the number one pick in the NHL draft, and Jack Eichel number two. He's not flashy like the YouTube highlights that you'll see from Connor McDavid or the overly, you know, skilled plays and soft hands, but he is just such a smooth skater. He's got a lot of size. He's a very, very good player. And hopefully Minnesota Duluth fans can enjoy watching him while also cheering on their team, because he is a special player.
Chad, I got to give you a visual here as we go into the break. Alexander Ovechkin tweeted out a picture with he and Messi. With his Barcelona jersey on and everything, and he's standing next to him all happy, just with a legend, and Messi being the legend. And I couldn't help but notice how gray AO is, and I'm like going, oh my word, is the end near? I mean, he looked that old. I mean, that's
isn't
how...
Isn't it amazing? I didn't realize that until the All-Star game when
Yeah.
Ovechkin was, you know, asking for the car and all that stuff. He has a lot of gray hair.
He's starting to look his age, man. I'm like, oh my gosh, where's the time going? We're going to take a time out and bring Tim Kolomainen in. We're going to talk more college hockey. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. By the way, I did a little checking. Alexander Ovechkin in his gray locks, just 29 years old. Chad Graff. I guess the league is starting to take its toll. I thought he was going to be like 35.
Must be rough. The poor guy must have a lot of stress with that lifestyle he leads.
He is awesome, and he's such a great ambassador to the National Hockey League. And one thing that, before we bring Tim Kolomainen in, that we cannot lose sight of is that a guy like Alexander Ovechkin could very easily being lured back to his homeland, obviously, in Russia, to play in the KHL, which is sort of known as the evil competitor, right? I mean...
Right.
But he chooses to be in the best league in the world and is an ambassador for the best league in the world and embraces it. And I think from this American to that Russian, tip of the cap.
He could be making a lot more money, so it's fun to see him stay.
Absolutely. It's bizarre how they've got the oil tycoon running that thing with all the dough. I mean, he's got do-si-do. Doesn't even know what to do with it. It's incredible.
throwing it away.
Absolutely. By the way, more people checking in and tweeting. Hello to Kathy and Dick Bates listening in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. If you're listening to the show, feel free to give us a call at 651-989-9105. Or you can also just text me or tweet Chad, myself, or our new guest, Tim Kolominen, who's at What's Your Deal? At Breakdown Sports USA Canada Spain. What is it?
No Canadians involved.
I know.
Although I've had people accuse me of sounding like I was Canadian.
Well, because you're one of those Northland guys from the, Two Harbors area, correct?
Silver Bay, actually. Grew up just, kind of halfway between Silver Bay and Two Harbors.
The evil competitor.
If you know the area, I'll give you the towns, but nobody outside of Beaver Bay, Minnesota really cares much about it.
Very good. So now you were in Fargo for that regional, and Chad asked you a great question off the air about the environment that you had there. Can you explain what it was like in that building? Was it rocking?
Yeah, it was. We talked about, actually during the press conferences, we talked to the coaches about the atmosphere. And you know about the NCAA moving these to more neutral, and I use that in quotes, locations. And supposedly, of course, Fargo is a neutral location, but everybody knew it was going to be a North Dakota-centric crowd. And I think they did a real good job of having Tech and St. Cloud State play the first game, because, obviously the crowd was mostly North Dakota folks, and it was kind of half full when that game started. But as we got into the third period and eventually into overtime, that place was packed, a lot of green in attendance, but they were enjoying themselves too. And by the time we got into that night game, it was as loud as any arena I think I've ever been in.
I don't know about you guys, but I would rather be on the road in a hostile environment with a ton of fans in a cavernous building with like Joe Louis Arena and nobody in it. What was your environment like in Manchester, Chad?
Well, Vinny Letieri actually joked that it was slightly more than Detroit, and when someone asked him what it was like to play in such an empty building, he said, well, we just did it at the Big Ten Championship, so we should be used to it by now, which is probably a scary thought. But, I think, so what they did here was BU played in the first game, and BU is the big draw. That's the reason fans will be here. It's just 45 minutes away from the BU campus, so today for the Minnesota Duluth CU game, I would think that there's going to be a strong crowd. It's going to be a good environment, but it was for the BU Yale game. But then the Gophers and Minnesota Duluth play after that. More fans stuck around than I expected for that Gophers game, but it was not a very good game. It was a good game if you're a Minnesota Duluth fan, but it was not a very close game. So by the time the second period ended, fans were making their way toward the exit, and at the end of the game, you can hear the players on the ice yelling at each other from up in the quote-unquote press box.
And absolutely. Well, I mean, so you could hear someone snapping their gum from the press box almost, I'm sure. So from Tim's game, Johnny Brodzinski checked in after the game. Of course, his team won in overtime to advance for the second straight year after the first round. They move on with an overtime winner, and he talked about that.
It was definitely an emotional one with the goal disallowed too, and we could have went up 2-1. Instead, they go up 2-1, and we had to battle back. And it was a big time goal late in the game. I think Dave did the best thing he could with drawing the 1-1 there, and we ended up just pulling our goalie and going on power play. So yeah, and then we got lucky too with them missing the two open nets. So but it was just an overall. At the very end, we got it done when we needed to.
Tim, that's a guy who likes to get it done when they need to, for sure, with Johnny Brodzinski. That guy he's a terrific hockey player. He's been great for St. Cloud State, and once again, he gets hurt and comes back. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you could tell how much they missed him. About midway through that first period, there was kind of a almost a little bit of a collision off to the right of the Tech goal, and he kind of got his leg bent under him a little bit funny. He kind of went down a little bit and got twisted around, and he laid on the ice for a good 2-3 minutes before he finally got up and skated off to the bench and eventually went into the locker room. I think everybody at that point kind of thought that, he wasn't going to be back. I mean, it didn't look good at that point. Bob Mosco said that the bench was about as quiet as he's ever heard it. They were a little bit nervous about what was going to happen. And about that time, the offense for St. Cloud State just dried up. They had a little burst at the end of the first period. They only got one shot on goal the entire second period. And you could just tell his absence. Brodzinski was back for the second period, but you could see he wasn't himself. And you could tell his absence really hurt them. But Mopsko called that third period that he played probably his best period of the year, and obviously he tied it with 37 seconds left, and then St. Cloud went on to win in overtime. So, yeah, his
We talked about that in the post-game press conference, about how much his return meant to that team.
Well, let's listen in. Goaltender Charlie Lindgren, who is terrific and has been great all year long, had this to say about his teammate.
Yeah, they came out really hard. They had some really good forwards, obviously, very quick. Forechecked really hard, and I think they kind of got us on our heels a bit right away. And then, we kind of settled in there towards the end of the second and, end up kind of figuring it out. I mean, that was it was tough to see, but Johnny's a tough kid. I mean, I had a feeling he was going to be coming back. He'd do anything for us, and, he ended up, he's a game changer. So when he came back, I mean, I think he lifted our spirits a bit, and, it was big time for us.
Of course, he was talking about the start that Michigan Tech had the St. Cloud State Huskies on their heels, and it was the play of Lindgren and the ability to weather the storm, Tim, from a very good Michigan Tech team that afforded them the opportunity to get it to overtime and then get the big Judd Peterson goal.
Yeah, Peterson even mentioned some of that. There was a toe save that Lindgren made in the third period. I mean, everybody in the arena thought that goal was going in. It was like a 2 or 3 on 1. Pass came across, and it was a nice, hard, clean shot right on the ice with the far post. And when he struck that puck, I thought, that one's in, this game's over. And somehow he got his toe over there. Not only did he get his toe over there, but he covered it up, too, before the rebound could pop back out. And it was one of those where I think we'll probably see that save on some of these highlight shows coming up in the next few days, for sure.
Well, those are the things that find themselves onto top 10 reels, no questions asked there. So the St. Cloud State Huskies win. I mean, this is a team. Remember when we were at the WCHA playoffs, Tim, and we're looking at the pairwise, and we're seeing them just hovering around maybe the 500 mark, and they were, number 10 in the pairwise, and we both were kind of scratching the noggin there going, what, how is that, but, here they are.
Yeah, it's funny, that came up too during conversation was, and Motzko talked about that. He talked about how tough his team's schedule was. I think he mentioned this was like the 8th week in a row that they've played a top 10 ranked team. I mean, just a crazy schedule, 25, I think he said 25 ranked teams in general. And so I guess, just playing that level of schedule, even if you're winning one, losing one every week, I mean, they're still hovering right around 500, but
19 and 18.
That's a schedule. Yeah. I mean, it shows in the pairwise up.
Well, it doesn't lie, and it tells you the truth. I mean, you can win cupcake games, and you can win and lose against good teams. You don't always necessarily get penalized for that. Now, your second game, obviously, that must have been just a madhouse with North Dakota.
Yeah, that was a madhouse. I got a funny story.
I can only imagine.
We may have been, those North Dakota fans in attendance may have been more interested in the Gopher Bulldog game over in New Hampshire than the fans out in New Hampshire. Every time that score was announced, the North Dakota fans would let up a pretty big cheer. So.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Why do they care?
They have a distinct hatred for all things Gophers. It really is.
Why do they care? Really?
I guess it's the old bad blood from the rivalry. I don't know. Maybe they.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Minnesota Vikings fans who have this vitriol for the Green Bay Packers fans and that thing, who could really care less about Minnesota and care more about Chicago.
I think it's kind of the same thing here.
It's like they're screaming. They're screaming and yelling over there, jumping up and down without their mascot because they can't figure that out. And then the Gopher faithful just sit here and say, huh? What? Is that a fair call?
That's a fair call. It was so strange, too, because there were some obviously good moments during that St. Cloud State Tech game. And every so often, just randomly, the North Dakota, seemingly randomly, if you weren't listening to the announcements, the North Dakota fans would just stand up in their seats, and it was a standing room, or it was a full standing ovation for the Bulldogs last night.
So we're wonderful. So now North Dakota though looked pretty good in their win against Quinnipiac. No question, this is a very good hockey team, and they've got some great leadership there.
They showed a lot of grit. They had a really nice outburst. Late in the first period, they scored those three goals in pretty short order and kind of took control of the game. But honestly, I thought Quinnipiac played very well too. They had a lot of shot attempts. They almost had a 2-1 advantage in shot attempts. But I almost wanted to say Sue. I won't go there. But the University of North Dakota,
you just did
a ton of shots.
Do you feel like you're are the mascot police coming after you right now, Tim?
They might be coming after me. You know, that living in Moorhead, we hear a lot of North Dakota news out here.
Uh-huh.
And the discussion over the mascot and what they're going to do, and you know how long this process has taken, it's kind of amusing to me. I'm not a North Dakota guy, so I don't get it.
Okay,
but it really is amusing.
So let's just clean this up. We know North Dakota is very good against Quinnipiac. They're going to be playing NCHC opponent, the St. Cloud State Huskies. From this perspective, go Huskies. That's the fandom coming out. Chad, what are your thoughts on all of this monkey business with the mascot and, you know, what's going on up there?
It's so much that it's reached out here. Everybody out here is talking about it here in New Hampshire. I'll be interested to see today. You know, we'll learn a lot more. Two of the Frozen Four spots will be taken. So I was interested to get your perspective. I mean, who do you think has the best chance of making the Frozen Four right now of the three Minnesota teams remaining? Minnesota State still hasn't played yet, but I think that their road is a little bit easier. And then Minnesota Duluth probably is not the favorite against Boston University. St. Cloud State probably is not the favorite against North Dakota. How many Minnesota teams do you think make the Frozen Four?
Well, I'll answer first, toss it over to Tim. You know, we both saw Minnesota State play at the Xcel Energy Center, and that's about as deep a team as you're going to see. They are deserving of the number one seed. I do think the championship does go through them. So I see Minnesota State punching through. Although, if they get past RIT, they've got possibly if UNO gets past Harvard there, that's a tough game. No game is easy at this stage. But I do think Minnesota State has the potential to move on to the Frozen Four and possibly win it. I don't like St. Cloud State's chances at this juncture. Win one, lose one scenario there. That's where I'm seeing that. However, I do think UMD knows how to coach and play in the postseason. And if anybody's going to give Boston University everything they can handle, it'll be the Bulldogs or the University of Minnesota. So I see those two teams. Tim, what are your thoughts?
You know, I'm 100% in agreement with you on that one. I'm going to go all over. I almost wanted to say Mankato again, but Minnesota State, I think, is clearly the favorite in that region.
And you can't say Tim, you can't say Mankato either when you're referring to them as sports. You can't.
Because throw me under the bus.
You'll get scolded.
I will.
Because
I think out here in this Fargo regional, there's one thing I do want to say for St. Cloud State. Just 8 days ago, they played North Dakota in the NCHC semifinals and beat them. So there is a little bit of history there, but I think that almost works against them because I think North Dakota is definitely going to be ready for this game tonight. And obviously the crowd is going to be, you know, in their corner the whole night.
Fair to say there's absolutely no secrets there. That was an absolutely lightning round of collegiate hockey covered in depth right here. We have reporters embedded all over the great nation of the United States covering college hockey. Of course, Chad Graff from the St. Paul Pioneer Press and co-host of the On the Ice radio show in Manchester, New Hampshire. Tim Kolomainen in Fargo. Guys, we'll be checking back in with you next week as we look to the Frozen Four. When we come back, more NHL talk. We're going to talk about the Wild run. How can you get tired of talking about that? David Helmer and myself from the studio back right after this on the Ice Radio Show.
You know, what we were talking about is you can't have any kind of eye on tomorrow's game, and you can't be only half into this one because you got a game tomorrow. We had to win this game, and now we get to get ready for a tough one tomorrow.
Boy, that was almost exactly what we were talking about on Radioactive Sports yesterday. You know, I mean, it's to the T. You know, you've got 4 points standing in front of the Minnesota Wild entering this weekend. Two last night against the Calgary Flames. Now we've got the Los Angeles Kings in town sitting in the St. Paul Hotel, wherever they chill. They got their coaching staff up there, obviously watching on intently and ready to go as they continue through their road trip. But very hard to not get past that first 60 minutes with the Calgary Flames. You wanted to get that absolutely clean. Los Angeles now is next on deck. Chad, it's absolutely imperative that it's one shift at a time, one period at a time, and this club clearly has bought into that concept.
Yeah, it hasn't always been one shift at a time for us. I've been happy to look ahead a little bit, but we're already looking at playoff matchups, looking at hotels and whatnot, but for this team, it's rather remarkable what they've been able to do, and I think that the most important thing from last night's game was they returned to, you know, sort of that home game that they need to play. They had a very big shot differential, and the thing that concerned me going back and this 10-game road winning streak that the Wild are on is remarkable, and they've done so many good things throughout that. However, they have not always outshot their opponents like we've gotten used to a Wild team doing. They were outshot by the Toronto Maple Leafs. They were outshot on Long Island. So I think what was important last night, and you look at some of the stats that pop out at you, Zach Parise, 7 shots on goal. Chris Stewart, 6 shots on goal. Matt Dumba, 4 shots on goal. So the Wild got back to a speed game. They got back to a puck possession game. And a lot of that, you know, it was just very big news for this team. And I think the other thing that sort of went under the radar a little bit was if there were struggles in the last couple of weeks, some of that was because of the top line wasn't producing, and Mikhail Granlund was the center on that line and wasn't able to win many draws. The top line was Zach Parise, wasn't starting with the puck very often. Last night, Mikhail Granlund won 10 of 14 faceoffs, a much better night for him. All around a very good night. Jonas Brodin, a +3. He's just been sensational and now has a team high +22 rating this season.
He is a +22, and you mentioned that +3 was huge last night, 17 points on the season. And, you know, you can't underestimate that rink-wide breakout pass, that outlet that he found Mikko Koivu with. It was a quick pass from the left wing wall, and Koivu gives it over to Chris Stewart, who, you know, Koivu does what you teach every young player to do, hopefully, and, oh, about 25% listen to you. But anyway, he goes straight to the net with his stick on the ice, and, you know, it was one of those goals where, you know, as a goaltender, you have to go from left to right, and there's going to be an opening. And, you know, the redirect, it was a perfect goal. It was a well-executed give-and-go, but it all started off the tape of Jonas Brodin. And this guy, I got into a debate 2 years ago, and it was this. It was, would Ryan Suter have been as good as he was his first year with the rookie Jonas Brodin next to him? Or did he make Jonas Brodin being next to him better? That was a heck of a debate.
It should have been, yeah. What side were you on?
I was on Brodin. You know, because my point was that Suter played with Shea Weber, for crying out loud. You know, I mean, he was part of an incredibly deep defensive. You know, Kimmo Tiiminen was there for a while, if I remember. I mean, so he had a ton of talent that he worked with in Nashville. And I'm just watching this unbelievable rookie just playing like he's 26 years old, and I'm just saying that guy should be rookie of the year, and that guy's going to win a Norris Trophy. I think he's that important. Now, I think it's something to think of too. Didn't he break his jaw earlier in the year?
He had a little bit of an injury and missed a few games, sort of an upper body injury. It was Jared Spurgeon who definitely had the concussion after getting hit by a puck on the chin. But Brodin has gone through a number of things. He's played on the left and the right this season. I think it's been remarkable, the bounce back season that he's had, because he had that outstanding rookie campaign where, in my opinion, he should have been up for the Calder. And then he slips a little bit his sophomore season, his second season in the NHL. And I think it's such a good sign for the Wild that he's come back and has been so good. And one of the things that, you know, you hear when you're on the road and talking to visiting teams and, when they scout the Wild and talk about moving forward in a possible playoff series with them, it's just how good their defense is. We talk about the speed and the depth up front and a top line with Zach Parise, but 1 through 6, this Wild defensive group is very, very good, and I think it's been a very big reason why they've been so good over the last 2 or 3 months.
And I'm going to say this. I can't wait to get Prosser back in the lineup, because I thought he was playing so well before he got injured.
I'm with you. If you have Prosser and Dumba as your third defensive pairing,
absolutely,
that's a very good defensive pairing. I know the name Prosser doesn't, you know, have the same ring that Dumba does, the former first round pick, but Prosser was playing very good hockey before he got hurt. And then for a second defensive pairing to have Marco Scandella and Jared Spurgeon, I think fans are very well aware of what Jared Spurgeon is able to do. He's been very good for the Wild over the last couple of years, but Marco Scandella has had a very big year. It's a very good top four. And then with your third defensive pairing, if you can have Prosser add some size, and it's not very often that you can have a third defensive pairing guy on your top power play. And that's what Matt Dumba is, and he scored a goal in that top power play last night. He's been very good. I'm very, very impressed this entire season, even through injuries and illnesses and everything else, with how good the Wild's defense has been.
So the Wild have the Los Angeles Kings tonight, who have won the first two meetings of the season with the Minnesota Wild. A 2-1 loss for the Wild at Staples Center back in October, and then a 4-0 loss at XL Energy Center in November. Both teams have kind of gone different directions, and the Kings are surging. However, this could be a telltale point for the Wild. The LA Kings are desperate. I mean, they've got a lot of work to do because they've got teams surrounding them in the Pacific Division. There's four teams battling for two or three spots there.
Right, and this is one of those games where coaches will always point out, and I'm sure Mike Yeo will this morning or whatever, he talks to the media that, well, the LA Kings were sitting here waiting for us last night as we had to play a game. So they always point that out. So don't be surprised if LA comes out and is the better team in the first period. But with Devan Dubnyk starting both games in a back-to-back, the Wild have shown that they have become a very good team in the second of back-to-backs, which goes against the statistical norms across the league. The Wild have won a few second of back-to-backs, so this is a big game for them. I think that if they can win this game, they give themselves a ton of room in the wild card, and I think that
they can stop
so much worrying about the wild card as much as they could even begin pressing up ahead in the Central Division. So we talked about what it would mean to catch Chicago. If you're going to do that, you have to start it with a win tonight.
A couple of readers we have from David Helmer, some league-wide notes. What do you got for us?
Well, one, I'm kind of curious if Toronto seems to be ready to offload a little bit in the offseason. If the Wild do get into the playoffs but struggle to put the puck in the net, could you see Chuck Fletcher willing to part with some young talent to try and pick up a veteran goal scorer like Phil Kessel?
Funny you say that. I noticed that obviously he's going to be on the wire in chat. I was thinking about that earlier this week. I would say, do you try? Maybe. But do you want the distraction? That's the key question. Can you deal with it?
I know that there are some Minnesota fans that, you know, have a strong loyalty to the Kessel name between Phil and his sister, but if he's available, do not expect the Wild to go after him. From everything I've heard, the Wild are not much interested in Phil Kessel.
Fans are not in the locker room. They stay in the seats, and that's why they stay there. What do you got? Anything else, David?
I head out to the West Coast with the San Jose Sharks and how they just fell apart. I think at the beginning of the year, a lot of people had them finishing in the top three in the Pacific, and for the most part, it looked like they were going to do that for the first few months, and then they just fell apart. Thornton and the GM, what kind of happened to that team to make them fall apart and not make a playoff push?
Doug Wilson, very interesting. You know, this is a team that's perpetually been in the playoffs each and every year. I think, Chad, since about 1995. Isn't that fair to say? I mean, it seems like they've been in the playoffs forever.
They've been a very good, consistent franchise. But we hear so much about leadership, and Mike Yeo always touts the Wild's leadership and what that means. And I think this is almost a case study for how important it is in the NHL. They stripped the C in San Jose. They don't have a full-time captain, and it's been a distraction all season. I don't think it's fair to say that that's the reason that they're not in the playoffs, but it has been a season-long distraction, and I think has contributed to why the San Jose Sharks will miss the playoffs this season.
Todd McClellan's been a great coach. Maybe their key parts, and I'm not saying Patrick Marleau, have been an issue there. So that's another whole talker. Should have brought that up a little bit earlier, but we'll maybe my bad, because we kept going on and on. Chad, enjoy that championship game, and we'll be you'll be back in studio next week, right?
I said that I was going to be back in studio last week. I said that about today, and I'm not there. But next week I will be in studio. Leaving snowy New Hampshire behind. There was already 2 feet of snow on the ground. Now it's snowing right now, and we'll get another couple inches today here in beautiful Manchester, New Hampshire.
It's gorgeous here today. Chad, thanks a lot for joining us on the Ice Radio Show. That's going to do it for David Helmer and Pete Wagner. Don't forget, at 11 o'clock, On Deck Radio with Gene Larkin, Al Newman, and myself.
One and done next.